This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking ahead to the Champions League action over the next couple of nights. Two English sides in action in tonight's action. Liverpool host Genk at Anfield. Chelsea are at Stamford Bridge at home against Ajax. We'll be looking ahead to both of those games, as well as looking ahead to some of the Champions League action tomorrow night, as Manchester City, 3 wins from 3 in their Champions League group so far. They travel out to Italy to take on Atalanta, who made a pretty good start to the Serie A season this year. We'll also talk a little bit about West Ham, who suffered a pretty embarrassing loss to Newcastle on the weekend. And remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558 here on the Premier League Fan Show. As I said, we'll be talking about that Saracen story in just a few moments' time. But obviously, it is Champions League game week 4 coming up tonight and tomorrow night. Obviously, we are in the second one of the back-to-back fixtures. So a couple of weeks ago, obviously, we had the reverse fixtures of tonight's games. And now it's the turn of the other way around. So going through all of the Champions League games tonight then. Two English sides in action. Liverpool are at home against Genk at Anfield. A win for the Reds at home tonight will put them 1 point away from qualification. The other English side, Frank Lampard's Chelsea, won late on at the Johan Cruyff Arena over in Holland. They host Ajax tonight. There are two early kickoffs in the Champions League tonight. Barcelona are at home against Slavia Prague. They made hard work of winning over in Prague, but did eventually come through 2-1. And Zenit St. Petersburg are at home against Leipzig. I think that was the early kickoff a couple of weeks ago as well. Then on to some of the other 8 o'clock kickoffs. In the other game in Liverpool's group, Napoli host Salzburg. Napoli atop of Group E on 7 points. And if Napoli and Liverpool were to win tonight, both at home, they would pretty much be both sealing qualification. Dortmund take on Inter Milan in one of the ties of the evening. Lyon play Benfica and Valencia take on Lille. As I mentioned, two English sides in action tomorrow night. Manchester City are over in Italy to take on Atalanta, and Tottenham are over in Belgrade. It's set to be a vociferous atmosphere over there. 55,000 people in Belgrade as Tottenham travel to Red Star Belgrade. There could be without Harry Kane, who missed Sunday's game against Everton with illness. So we'll be talking about Liverpool, Manchester City, and a bit of Premier League chat with West Ham later in the hour. West Ham lost 3-2 at home to Newcastle on the weekend. Could have been a lot more severe than that. Some West Ham fans calling for his head, really, and potentially calling for Pellegrini to lose his job. A lot of the fans leaving the stadium on Saturday who went on West Ham Fan TV were calling for Pellegrini to be sacked. And we'll be getting the views of someone from West Ham Fan TV later in the hour. As I mentioned, there's plenty of Champions League action in the world of football tonight. Liverpool are at home against Genk. Chelsea play Ajax, amongst a whole host of other Champions League fixtures. We'll also be talking a little bit about Manchester City's game in Italy tomorrow. Also a bid on West Ham. Could Manuel Pellegrini be starting to become under a little bit of pressure? But up next, we'll be talking all things Liverpool.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. One of the two English sides in Champions League action tonight is Liverpool, and I'm delighted to say that to talk all things Liverpool, we are joined now by Richard Buxton, Merseyside football journalist. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Richard. Before we look ahead to tonight's Champions League game, it was a pretty dramatic game on the weekend at Villa Park. Two late goals from Andrew Robertson and Sadio Mane sealed a come-from-behind win for Liverpool 2-1 at Villa. This just shows how much resilience and determination is in this Liverpool side, that they just simply never give up.
Yeah, there's always a shade of the Alex Ferguson teams of Manchester United to them, the way they grind up results and they never know when they're beaten them. We saw that as well in the Carabao Cup game against Arsenal midweek. I mean, I don't think anyone fancied Liverpool to progress with the team that they had out, which was, you know, a couple of senior players and a lot of youngsters. And they just never know when they're beaten. And I think that's a trait that Jürgen Klopp instilled across the board in Anfield. And again, it showed through on Saturday.
Looking ahead, just one of the big points from that game on Saturday was obviously the VAR controversy. I mean, yet again, we kind of arrive here on a Monday afternoon to do the Premier League fan show and we're talking about VAR. Roberto Firmino obviously had a goal disallowed. It's been kind of seen as the armpit goal that was disallowed. What was your view as that unfolded? Because it was utter chaos. Some people suggesting one frame showed he was onside, then another suggested he was offside. People talking about whether you can even score with your armpit if that was adjudged as onside. How did you view it as it unfolded? And now we're a few days on. How are you looking at that situation as well as VAR in a general perspective?
Well, I think all these days on, it's still farcical. I mean, when you look at it, as you say, it's basically an armpit that's offside. And, you know, how can you legislate for that? But with regards to VAR, I mean, it's quite telling that Martin Atkinson was involved in both of the big talking points on the subject of the weekend. Obviously, he was the VAR official at Villa Park on Saturday, and he was the referee at Goodison Park on Sunday. And the calls he got in both games were awful. And I think this is the problem with VAR. It's meant to legislate for, you know, errors of marginal errors and, you know, mistaken identities and, you know, fractional offsides, but it's just becoming such a buzzkill on the game. And, you know, we're seeing lengthy delays. We saw plenty of Goodison Park around the VAR, penalty calls and sendings off. We've seen them at Anfield as well. And as you say, it was absolute chaos at Villa Park. And a lot of that comes down to the officials, I think, as much as the technology itself.
Looking ahead then to tonight's Champions League game, in the build-up to it, obviously there's been a bit of tension, I suppose, between Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp, because straight after City's game against Southampton, which was also at 3 o'clock on Saturday, and Liverpool were obviously playing at 3 o'clock as well, Guardiola mentioned how he hadn't seen the game and yet made the comment that he believed that sometimes Sadio Mane is diving. Jurgen Klopp said he doesn't want to talk about Manchester City, that they've got a game tonight to focus on, not talking about them, but not kind of mentioning tactical fouls. What do you make of this kind of to-and-froing from Guardiola and Klopp? Is it a case of this is the good old mind games days, or do you think some of the comments that have been made are a bit petty and perhaps a bit unnecessary?
Well, I think Pep Guardiola was trying to reignite the feud he had when Jose Mourinho was at Real Madrid and he was up against it at Barcelona. It does feel very much like that sort of the archetypal mind games we saw it with Wenger and Ferguson, Wenger and Mourinho. I mean, it's interesting that he mentioned Sadio Mane, because it's been dissected that it could have either been about Sadio Mane or it could have been about Liverpool as a team in general, because of the way he phrased it. Now, whichever one it is, it's still an offensive remark to make about Liverpool, and it's designed to try and get in the heads of the referees ahead of Sunday to sort of say, well, when Mane goes to the ground, that's not a penalty. When Salah goes to the ground, that's not a free kick. And it's classic psychology on Guardiola's part. But again, yeah, Klopp hasn't helped by saying, well, I'm not going to get into this, and then start mentioning tactical fouls. So, I mean, I think they're both given as good as they're getting, but I think Guardiola definitely has, in the past few months, been ramping up the sort of anti-Liverpool rhetoric from his side. Which is strange, because him and Klopp had quite a good relationship for a large part of last season, and then all of a sudden over the summer it just flipped. I don't know if it's because Pep Guardiola fears Liverpool, you know, is Liverpool going to be a force this season, or just because he wants to have that thrill of the, you know, the feuding rivalry. But I think it's an interesting tactic from both managers. But clearly, I mean, 8 days before the game, Guardiola comes out with statements, knowing that Liverpool have won at Villa Park and his team have only just about pulled it back themselves. I mean, he should be focusing on his own team, really, rather than what the other lot are doing. But clearly, there's more to this than just the game ahead. It's always, let's look at the next game, let's look at how we can influence, you know, when Liverpool play Chelsea, when City play Arsenal, those sorts of things. So I think there's probably a bit of gamesmanship going on both sides, but Guardiola is driving it a lot more.
Do you think that, in particular with Guardiola's comments about how suggesting that at times Sadio Mane dives, do you think that will have any impact on the referee? Because, I mean, the referees have been at the centre of everything this season so far. They've perhaps dominated things more than the actual players themselves. So do you think that's one, a motivation for Guardiola to do it, that in theory at the back of a referee's mind, he might be thinking about Guardiola's comments when they get to that game in a situation where potentially Liverpool are on the lookout for a penalty, and suddenly the words of Pep Guardiola might come into the forefront of a referee's mind.
I think it's possible. I mean, you'd like to think that the referees are a little bit more strong-willed than to be bending to what one manager says about the other team. I mean, Mike Oliver was taking charge of the game on Sunday and seems like a decent referee who doesn't strike me as someone who would be swayed by this sort of attempt at psychology. But you never know. I mean, Anfield is a very, very hostile place when we're put up against it, as we saw against Tottenham and even against Arsenal in the Carabao Cup. And you do wonder, I think that's probably going to be a bigger impact on refereeing decisions. But then again, Liverpool have had so many penalty shouts and so many, you know, fractional calls given against them that it probably doesn't count for much whether Pep Guardiola thinks that Mane or the whole Liverpool front three died. I think referees are probably using their own judgments a bit more. The only thing I will say is, frankly, it's not Martin Atkinson, because I think that probably would have been a recipe for disaster.
I think you're right there, Richard. Looking ahead then to tonight's game, Jurgen Klopp has intimated that he's looking to freshen things up for tonight's game. We did see plenty of changes when Liverpool went to Genk a few weeks ago. Jordan Henderson, the captain, wasn't pictured in training, although that hasn't ruled been he hasn't been ruled out of the game. The expectation is Fabinho will come back in, having been rested, so that he didn't get suspended for the City game. What other changes can we expect tonight? Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita coming into midfield, Joe Gomez at the back, maybe Origi coming in for Salah up top?
I think probably Oxlade-Chamberlain will be getting the nod again. I think he's working his way back to a decent level of form and fitness, but obviously he needs to get the games under his belt. Fabinho, as you mentioned, obviously needs to get into that rhythm before Sunday, because the Villa game, he was walking a disciplinary tightrope. Klopp took the cautious decision not to play him. I do think that left Liverpool a little bit exposed in midfield. I don't think the axis of Lallana, Henderson, Wijnaldum really had the same level of presence that Fabinho often offers. So, I mean, potentially Fabinho getting in about an hour and then probably bringing Keita on, or starting Keita from the off to try and give him a bit more confidence and build up his own level, because Liverpool are going to need him when the season kicks into the busiest phase in December and January. So I think probably they're the changes you look at. And then maybe it depends on Salah, because Salah's obviously had that knock at the Leicester game and it's affecting, you can see, in his form. So maybe Origi will come in on the back of what he did against Arsenal last week, but potentially he might do what he does with Fabinho and give him an hour and then bring Origi on.
You mentioned Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain there. He's a player that I really, really rate. I really like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. He, in his first season, he was gradually eased in, and then the second half of the season was playing brilliantly before that horrendous injury against Roma. As you mentioned, it was always going to take time, even when he got back to fitness, to work his way back. I've seen over the last few weeks from him, hit starting to get back to where he was 18 months ago. You saw his two goals against Genk, the goal he scored in the Carabao Cup, the impact he made off the bench at the weekend against Villa, then off the bench against Manchester United. Do you think we're starting to see Oxlade-Chamberlain get back to where he was 18 months ago? And for me, when he is fully fit, he is 100% in Liverpool's best 11.
Definitely. I mean, I think it bears repeating that Oxlade-Chamberlain said himself that he's nowhere near the level he expects to be at, and Jurgen Klopp agrees with that. They're obviously taking a cautious approach, because if you get into that rhythm and you start declaring yourself fully fit and fully back to form, it can unravel very quickly if you have one or two off games. But I think he's shown, especially with his eye to goal from long range, I mean, that's been a real confidence boost for him at the moment. I mean, as you say, the goal was against Genk and against Arsenal. They really were classics, and you know, that's the sort of thing that Liverpool don't really have in the midfield at the moment. They don't have players who can really drill one from distance. I mean, I think you're probably going back to the days of Steven Gerrard, since they had someone who could really confidently strike a ball and find the back of the net 9 times out of 10. So he's going to be an invaluable asset when he is back fully fit and back to form. Obviously, himself and Jurgen Klopp are taking a bit of a cautious approach, as you can understand, because he had those setbacks after the injury against Roma, and it took a bit of time for him to get back to where he is now. But I think where he is now is not where he will be in 12 months' time if he carries on with this regular run of games and keeps getting the goals he's getting.
If Liverpool were to get all 3 points tonight, they'd get within a point of qualification. Napoli in the other game in the group are at home against Salzburg. I would expect that we would beat Genk quite easily tonight and score plenty of goals, considering how easily we won in Genk. But does the fact that qualification is quite near, and the fact that there is a rather big game on Sunday, does that maybe alter the way that Jurgen Klopp does look at tonight's game? And then looking to the final two games, if Liverpool do win tonight, how do you see Jurgen Klopp's team selection changing in those games if qualification is virtually secured with two games to go?
I think Jurgen Klopp will still go all out in the competition. I think he's shown continually over the past few seasons that he doesn't take half measures when it comes to the Champions League, as we saw with them overturning that semi-final deficit against Barcelona and other games besides. So I think Klopp will probably take quite a reasonable approach in terms of his own mentality. He'll believe that the Champions League is worth winning. Obviously, the reigning holders, he'll want to retain that as well as having a Premier League title tilt. So I don't think that qualification hinges on team selections, really. But I do think that Sunday's an interesting prospect because he may have to play Fabinho for an hour. He may have to rest Chamberlain for a little bit. He may have to take Sauer off around the same time he takes Fabinho off, if Fabinho does start. And I think it's probably the fact that City are home and dry in their group probably plays into Liverpool's hands a little bit, because Liverpool needs to get that momentum going. They need to get a good ensemble of players together who are going to be ready for Sunday. And if City are taking the night off, essentially, with their selections, that's probably going to be, although they'll be well rested, the Liverpool are probably going to have more momentum going into that game than City are going to have if they rest maybe Aguero, Gundogan and people like that.
Just a quick fire prediction then, Richard. What do you think the score will be tonight?
Well, I think Liverpool's clean sheet record isn't great at the moment, so probably you'd back end to get one. But I think Liverpool probably 3-1, 4-1. Same again as it was in the corresponding fixture in Belgium.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Richard. That was Richard Buxton, Merseyside football journalist, looking ahead to Liverpool's Champions League game tonight at home against Genk. Obviously, Chelsea are also in action. They're at home against Ajax, the second of the English side in action. So we're going to continue looking ahead to the Champions League action tonight and tomorrow night. Just a reminder, though, of the big sports story of the afternoon is that the Premiership and European champion Saracens have been deducted 35 points and fined £5.36 million for breaching salary cap regulations in three seasons. They have appealed the decision, so therefore those punishments are suspended for the moment, but they are facing a 35-point deduction, which would put them at severe risk of being relegated. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Lovesport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. One of the two English sides in action tomorrow night in the Champions League over in Italy are Manchester City. They take on Atalanta. We'll be talking all things City next.
This is Love Sport.
So we're going to be talking all things Champions League again. One of the two English sides in action tomorrow night are Manchester City. They are over in Italy to take on Atalanta, who've made an impressive start to the Serie A season. To talk all things Manchester City now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Andy Hampson, Northwest writer for the PA. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Andy, from over in Italy. And before we talk about that Champions League game, on the weekend, a comeback win for City, 2-1 for the, both of the top two. It will come back wins. What did you learn from Saturday's game on the weekend? Was it a case of City showing a resilience to come from 1-0 down after 70 minutes to win 2-1? Or were there things in that game that were slightly concerning if you're a City fan?
Hi, Kieran. Yeah, good to speak to you again. Yeah, I think it's a mixture of all of those things, really. Yeah, it was a good win in the end. City came back to win the game. They showed the character that they needed to show in these kind of games, and that is very important when you're challenging for the title, as we've seen with Liverpool as well. But I think they will win. This was a team that got beat 9-0 in their previous game, and it took them a long time to break them down. Southampton were very well organised, and they defended really well. They got men behind the ball. They packed the box with their own players. There were all 11 of them in the box sometimes in the game. And yeah, City really did struggle. They kept bombarding them with crosses. Southampton blocked everything they threw at them, really, until the very end. So I think, yeah, they will need to work on that. But then again, it's not an unknown that teams do want to play like this against Manchester City. They do have to work out a way of breaking them down.
I believe I'm right in saying, Andy, that when Sergio Aguero scored the equaliser, that was City's first shot on target in the whole game. And that came just around the 70-minute mark. Was it just one of those days where City just had a lot of attempts, but none seemed to go on target? And another day, City may have had seven on target and could have scored five.
Well, yeah, that is true. Although I do think the shots on target is a bit of a misleading statistic, because I think it only counts as shots that are actually saved by the goalkeeper or blocked down the line. There were a number of other shots that City got in that were blocked by defenders. that probably would have been on target if the defender hadn't been there. I mean, so he did put a lot of pressure on Southampton. They did, as I say, get a lot of crosses in, have a lot of opportunities and openings. Yeah, they just didn't happen to be on target under the as on target is defined. But I think they still really tested Southampton.
One concerning thing for City fans, Andy, after the weekend was the injury to David Silva. He went off at half-time to be replaced by Gabriel Jesus. Pep Guardiola said he's a doubt for Sunday's game at Anfield against Liverpool. How big a blow would he be? Not really for midweek, because what we've seen from David Silva is he's playing the Premier League games, not really playing the Champions League games. If he is to be ruled out of the big fixture at Anfield on Sunday, how big a miss would he be for City? Or are they in that position now where, even without a player of that quality, they have a squad capable of dealing with his absence, especially if it's only just kind of for a short period of time?
Yeah, it is a blow because he's a wonderful player, as we know, we've seen for many years now, and his experience is very important to City. And also, I think that Bernardo Silva hasn't been in great form either. So you do wonder what other options they've got with Leroy Sane injured. But Riyad Mahrez has been playing fairly well this season. You know, obviously, De Bruyne and Sterling, you know, you rarely see them have a bad game these days. So I think that they are still well covered. But yeah, obviously, they would prefer to have Silva available if he was. But it doesn't look like he's going to be. We're yet to hear for definite, but Guardiola's talking about 10 days. So that takes him out of this game. And you know, we probably won't see him again until after the international break now.
Obviously, a lot of the debate about David Silva, people ask the question of how good is he? Where does he rate amongst the Premier League players, both in terms of imports from abroad as well as just in a general context? Where in your opinion, Andy, does he rate in terms of in the Premier League era, players as a whole, no matter whether they're from England or from abroad, how highly do you think he goes up there? Because if you're looking at it, he's one of the best midfielders to have probably ever played, no matter whether you're talking about an English player or players from abroad.
Oh, he's absolutely right up there. I mean, I think a lot of City fans consider him to be the greatest player that the club's ever had. Certainly, you look at the last 10 years since the takeover by Sheikh Mansour, the players that are up there, talking David Silva, Sergio Aguero, Yaya Toure, Vincent Kompany, they're like the standout players. And you think Silva is probably right at the top there, really. I think Sergio Aguero gets a lot more of the headlines and attention because he's a goal scorer. And Silva's a kind of a quiet personality, really. We never hear him say much. He keeps himself to himself. But on the field, he's an absolute magician. I mean, they call him Merlin at City. He's a wonderful player, and I think he'll be remembered for a long time as one of City's greatest ever players and one of the Premier League's greatest ever players, too.
We've talked about the matters on the field. Let's talk about some of the comments that Pep Guardiola made after the game. He was interviewed straight after City's win against Southampton, which was at exactly the same time as Liverpool's game at Aston Villa. Now, Pep Guardiola said that he hadn't seen any of the game, yet made the comment that Sadio Mane at times is a special talent, at other times is diving. What do you make of those comments? Are you thinking this is kind of one of those traditional old spats between managers that everyone loves to see, where both managers go at each other and it creates a great kind of scenario going into a big game like Sunday? Or do you look at it and think it's a rather strange comment to make, especially as you've just made the comment that you haven't actually seen the game and didn't see the incident?
Yeah, I think it's very strange, really. You look at Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp as well. Neither of them really go in for mind games. They're too good for that, almost. They're almost above it. I mean, this is a different generation now to Sir Alex Ferguson. They're a completely different mentality, I think, to Jose Mourinho. They don't need to get involved in these little verbal spats. You know, their teams do the talking for them. So we rarely see this kind of thing from Pep. That said, he does lob in the odd hand grenade from time to time. You mentioned before on the eve of Manchester Derby a couple of years ago that he was offered a chance to sign Paul Pogba. That didn't work out too well because they went and lost the Derby and Pogba scored two goals. He also referred to Spurs as the Harry Kane team a little while ago. If you remember, I don't think he really gained anything from that, to be honest, and he later admitted it was wrong. So I don't know why he needed to get involved in this, really. Klopp has predictably, I think, defended Mane and say, no, he's not a diver, but he has won a couple of penalties. I thought it was funny how Match of the Day, when Alan Shearer and Gary Lineker said, oh, that's a dive, that seems to be accepted. And then, you know, moments later when Guardiola mentioned it, all hell broke loose. But then again, Mane did dive, I think, and he was booked for it. So Guardiola's got a point, but really it's just riling Liverpool a little bit. It's going to fire up the atmosphere at Anfield even to an even more intense level than it was going to be anyway, and I don't think he really needed to do that. Whether it affects Klopp or Mane in the game, I mean, that could have been the intention behind it. Personally, I don't think that's going to work. Maybe, though, it could affect the referee. Maybe the referee will view incidents when Liverpool players go down in the box with a certain eye with regard to those comments. But we'll have to wait and see. But looking at it from at the moment, I don't think it was a good idea from Guardiola to get involved in it. Unlike him, I suppose Klopp's given him a little bit of a get-out with what he said yesterday in his press conference by saying it wasn't clear if Guardiola was referring to Mane or not. So now that's kind of inviting Guardiola to clarify his comments, and we'll see what he says later when he holds a press conference this evening.
As you said there, Andy, you're out in Italy, obviously. You'll be at Pep Guardiola's press conference later ahead of tomorrow night's game. City away at Atlanta. City won 3 from 3 in their group so far, making things a little bit easier for themselves than they have done in previous campaigns, where they've had perhaps easier groups and they've made a bit of a kind of stumbling effort to get across the line. I mean, City will be pretty much guaranteed a qualification. They will be with a win tonight. How does that alter his team's selection? We've seen Pep Guardiola rotate his options because in certain areas of the pitch, he's got an abundance of quality. How do you see the City team being changed from the weekend against Southampton, especially with Sunday's game in mind at Anfield?
Yeah, well, he's got to be thinking about Liverpool, and that is the big one this week. Absolutely no doubt about it. But yeah, this is an important game because, as you say, if they win tonight, they go through. They could even secure top spot in the group if the other results, but in the game between Dynamo Zagreb, goes in their favour. Because City won so convincingly when they played Atalanta a couple of weeks ago, I think everyone expects them to win, and you could therefore view this game as a little bit of an inconvenience. But really, they have to take it seriously. Guardiola doesn't allow complacency anyway. He never has done. It's just not in his makeup. So I think they're going to go out there and you know, go and try and get this job done, get the game won. There may be a bit of room for resting players. I don't think there'll be too much. We might possibly see Gabriel Jesus start ahead of Sergio Aguero. That's a change that he could make. We know, as I mentioned, David Silva is not going to be playing. Phil Foden is also suspended, so that limits the options a little bit. I think maybe Riyad Mahrez could play. As I said earlier, Bernardo Silva has not been playing too well lately. But I don't think there's a lot of scope for changes. The interesting one could be in defence. Fernandinho has played a lot of games centre-back recently, but Nicolas Otamendi and John Stones are both fit now. You'd think, you know, you'd want to get your specialist centre-backs back into the groove, really, before they play a big game like Liverpool. For some reason, he doesn't seem to want to trust them both playing together. But, I'd imagine he's going to want them to get them back in. I think they could both play today. It could give us a clue towards the weekend as well. If Fernandinho was to play in defence, that could indicate that Fernandinho was probably going to play against Liverpool in defence as well. But then it's a difficult one. I mean, Fernandinho's 34 now. Do you want him playing 3 games in a week? It's all interesting. Some changes could be made, but not too many, I don't think.
And just a quick fire prediction then for you, Andy. Atalanta made a good start to Serie A this season so far. Do you think City will make it 4 wins from 4?
I do, yeah. I think City should win this. I mean, they showed they were clearly superior to Atalanta a couple of weeks ago, and Atalanta have struggled as well in the Champions League. They are playing fairly well in Serie A, but they've found the Champions League pretty tough so far. I expect that to continue. And they've also had to give up home advantage. They're playing at the San Siro now instead of their own ground because that doesn't meet UEFA requirements. So I think it could be a bit of an eerie atmosphere. I don't think it'd be a massive crowd. So I think those things are all in City's favour, really. I expect them to win, you know, comfortably, really, perhaps by 2 or 3 goals.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Andy. That was Andy Hampson, a Northwest football writer for the PA, is out there in Italy at the moment. As Andy mentioned, they're having to play at the San Siro in Champions League games because their stadium isn't quite up to the standard that it should be for a Champions League game. So Atalanta host Manchester City tomorrow night in the Champions League. City looking to make it 4 wins from 4 in their group and looking to qualify with a couple of games to go. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to turn our attention to a Premier League side not in action in Europe this week, and we'll be talking all things West Ham next.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things West Ham now, and delighted to say we are joined by Dan Lawless from West Ham Fan TV. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Dan. I'm sure it wasn't a particularly good weekend for you and your fellow West Ham fans. A 3-2 home loss to Newcastle, which could have been a lot more looking at the highlights. A lot of goals Newcastle left out there. What on earth happened to the Hammers on Saturday?
It's just tactical disaster is, I think, what happened. You know, I think they saw us coming a mile away, Newcastle. We played that high line. We had the likes of Zabaleta and players like that. It was, you know, not the fastest, and they was able to exploit that with their really pacey players and sort of get in behind our high line and cause us all manner of problems. I mean, the goals, two of the goals came through from set pieces, but I mean, it was still just putting us under all sorts of pressure. It was a disaster.
I've heard some of your comments on Pablo Zabaleta, why Manuel Pellegrini isn't picking Ryan Fredericks there. From the outset of the season, it looked like West Ham had strength and depth and quality going forward, but defensively, they still looked very, very vulnerable. How do you look back at the summer transfer window and think maybe that's something that Pellegrini should have addressed in the summer by bringing in a couple of defensive options?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, something that we could have looked at. But, you know, I think the problem was for me is, you know, Zabaleta obviously is coming to the end of his time. But, you know, if Frederick, whether he's not fit or you don't want to play him, then play a different system to fit the players that we have available. So even if we haven't got the funds to go out and sign more defenders, I mean, I think our centre-back, particularly Diop and Ogbonna, I'm happy with for now. But yeah, it's the full-backs. We were saying we need a new full-back, so we didn't get them. But, you know, at least play to the strengths then of the players that we have got. That's the problem for me, just playing the same system regardless of what players we have available to us.
West Ham are obviously without their starting goalkeeper Lukas Fabianski, which a number at West Ham and also generally actually rate very, very highly as one of the better goalkeepers actually in the Premier League. He's obviously out for a number of months, and Roberto is currently in there. How big a miss did kind of Saturday, as well as the fact that a lot of other things went wrong, did Saturday highlight how big a role and how important Fabianski is to West Ham?
Yeah, I mean, definitely to a degree. I mean, he made some really important saves, Roberto, that kept us in the game. But still, his positioning isn't where it should be. And he's obviously an experienced keeper, but I don't know whether it's the Premier League translation thing where there's just certain basics that he doesn't seem to have down. And he does let in silly goals. So it is a miss, but I don't think that's particularly the main cause of the reason why we lost. You know, we really struggled to create chances. We struggled to break teams down. And, you know, I think that's a big, big problem. You know, as Michael Owen, you know, cleverly once said, you know, if you don't score goals, you don't win games, of course. You know? So that's the problem, mate.
West Ham are without a win in their last five league games. I believe quite a lot of the West Ham fans on West Ham Fan TV said that they perhaps would like Pellegrini to get the sack, and potentially he's not the man to take you for, that maybe he's come towards the end of the line at West Ham. What's your view on Pellegrini? Are you starting to lose patience with him and starting to wonder whether someone else would be better, or do you look at it and think who else would be out there that could do a better job than what Pellegrini's doing?
Yeah, I mean, a combination of the two. It's just, the thing that frustrates me is just the fact that, you know, he's going to play the same way no matter what. You know, no matter the opposition we're playing against, no matter what players we have. That's the frustrating, the unwillingness to adapt and the lack of just tactical ability there. But at the same time, I don't want to get rid of him unless we have someone long-term in place. Otherwise, you're just going round in circles all the time. We're just going to keep bringing in new managers and end up in the same situation. So unless we're really in trouble, in danger of going down, I'd keep him for now and maybe start looking and start shortlisting some names. And because, look, he was never going to be an 8-year, 10-year manager. You know, this is only going to be a max 5-year job, so, due to his age. So, yeah, I think we should look at that, but I wouldn't just pull the trigger right now.
Looking ahead then to West Ham's next game, the final game before the international break is away at Burnley this weekend. That looks like a tough game. Do you think that West Ham have the quality to end this winless run?
We definitely have the quality, and it's the players' turn up. on any given day, you know, we can do a job. We can beat anyone. But the problem is like I said, not being able to break teams down. Burnley are one of them teams that, especially at home, they're a really tough team to play against. And if they dig in, you know, it's going to be hard for us to score goals. So, but with the players, sometimes, you know, you have players like Lanzini or an Anderson who can pull off a little bit of magic. And, you know, with next thing you know, the ball's in the back of the net. So it's really hard to predict what's going to happen. So we need that win badly, though. It's really becoming a must-win game because it's just going to get more and more toxic. And we need that little bit of positivity going into the Spurs game.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Dan. That was Dan Lawless from West Ham Fan TV. A lot of Hammers fans after the game on obviously the Fan TV show that Dan's on were saying that they've had enough of Pellegrini, that he should leave. I think that's a typical kind of football kind of fans' response, is that you're always, especially straight after a game, and that's what makes Fan TV so popular, is because you are at your most emotional minutes after the full-time whistle. One of the big questions West Ham fans, I suppose, have to ask themselves is who is out there that would do a significantly better job? Because it's all well and good saying that someone isn't good enough and that their kind of reign should come to an end. But who is available and realistic to come in that would actually take West Ham forward another level? And that's not always a simple question. It's all well and good wanting a manager gone, but if you don't think clearly about who could come in to do a better job, then it's not necessarily the best thing to do to just change a manager for the sake of it. So I think it was quite clear from the outset of the season, West Ham have forward options. Yarmolenko, Lanzini, Haller. They've got plenty of forward players, Felipe Anderson. They've got plenty of attacking players, but are still look defensively at West Ham. They look so vulnerable, there to be got at, that they're going to concede goals. And in a game like this, they conceded three against Newcastle, who hadn't scored more than once in a game this season. And realistically, it could have been 6 or 7 for the Magpies. So that must be really concerning for West Ham fans. But I think it's a little bit premature to be suggesting that Pellegrini should lose his job. Obviously, it's not a great run they're on, winless in 5 and tough game on the weekend away at Burnley. But I think it's too early to be suggesting that Pellegrini's job should be on the line. Obviously, I mean, that's the Premier League for you nowadays. We're into November. I mean, it's no surprise that questions are being asked of all sorts of managers up and down the league table, but I wouldn't necessarily say there's an obvious candidate out there to replace. I think there were some West Ham fans suggesting Eddie Howe, that they would like to see him come over from Bournemouth to West Ham. I suppose Hammers fans, would you be happy with Eddie Howe if potentially West Ham were in for him? And I suppose Bournemouth fans, are you worried that potentially Eddie Howe might move on from Bournemouth? I mean, Bournemouth have done a great job. I have a huge amount of respect for Eddie Howe and what he does there. They play a great style. They're really interesting to watch. And I think for such a small club to be doing what they are is fantastic. But they only have a 12,000-seater stadium. They're not a particularly big club at all. And you might think, Eddie Howe, West Ham are a bigger club than Bournemouth. So it would be going to a bigger club, even though Bournemouth are higher up the table than West Ham at the moment. It would be a step up for Eddie Howe. So I don't know whether Bournemouth fans are worried about the prospect of Eddie Howe leaving in the next 12 months. West Ham fans, would you like Eddie Howe to be the next manager? Should Pellegrini go, I suppose, is the first question. And then should Eddie Howe be one of those names rise to the top of the shortlist? If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Lovesport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. Just a reminder of all the Champions League games to come tonight. Obviously, 8 fixtures. Liverpool are at home against Genk, Chelsea at home to Ajax, 2 early kickoffs, Barcelona against Slavia Prague, Zenit St Petersburg against RB Leipzig, Napoli take on Salzburg, Borussia Dortmund against Inter Milan, Lyon play Benfica, and Valencia take on Lille. So Liverpool and Chelsea in action tonight. Manchester City and Tottenham in action away from home tonight. Both Liverpool and Chelsea are at home in tonight's action.
This is Love Sport.